How's it going, everybody? Brian Alvarez here on Wrestling Observer Live. We're here for the next 2 hours talking pro wrestling and mixed martial arts, as we are every Sunday, 3 o'clock p.m. Pacific, 6 Eastern, on the Sports Byline USA Radio Network Sirius Satellite Radio, Channel 92, 94, 794, XM Radio Channel 208, and streaming live worldwide on the internet at WrestlingObserver.com. I am broadcasting here this week from beautiful Kauai, Hawaii, and last night, for the first time ever, I watched a UFC event from a sports bar. I went in there, tons of Hawaiians and tourists and travelers all watching UFC, the 20th anniversary show, George St. Pierre versus Johnny Hendricks for the welterweight title. It was interesting to watch. There were a lot of people rooting for George St. Pierre. There were a lot of people rooting for Johnny Hendricks. But at the end of the day, the biggest reaction was at the end of that fight when they read the scores and George St. Pierre won on a split decision. There were fans outraged at this call. People talking about how GSP was all beat up and Johnny Hendricks looked like he hadn't even been hit, how the UFC was corrupt, how they hired the worst judges imaginable, everything you can imagine I heard last night. And so tonight on the show, we are going to talk about why, even if you thought that Johnny Hendricks won that fight, why George St. Pierre getting the win was, in fact, an acceptable call under the current criteria for mixed martial arts judging. Probably going to be a controversial show, but we're going to talk about it here. All of the results from UFC, the 20th anniversary show, we're going to talk about here, including the history of UFC. We're going to talk about UFC going all the way back to UFC 1 and before. Not to mention all of the latest news coming out of the company. We'll talk about the mysterious supposed retirement of George St. Pierre. What happened there? We'll talk about John Jones. They announced a new fight for him and then immediately announced that it was canceled. Tons of news coming out of UFC last night. Plus, since it is Wrestling Observer Live, we got a ton of pro wrestling news as well. We'll talk about Survivor Series. We'll talk about AJ fainting on a WWE house show. The Total Divas event from last week, the TV show on E! We'll talk about that. Plus, Andy Kaufman. Is he alive? That's right. Jerry Lawler's been all over the place talking about the possibility of Andy Kaufman being alive. What's going on here? Plus, WrestleMania ticks, how they're doing. We'll talk about Chris Hero, AJ Styles, so much more. All of that after the break. You're listening to Wrestling Observer Live on the Sports Byline Broadcasting Network. We are back here on Wrestling Observer Live. Brian Alvarez here, WrestlingObserver.com. We're joined by Mike Sempervivi, also of WrestlingObserver.com. We are here every Sunday, 3 o'clock p.m. Pacific, 6 Eastern, on the Sports Byline USA Radio Network Sirius Satellite Radio, Channel 92, 94, 794, XM Radio Channel 208, and streaming live worldwide on the internet at WrestlingObserver.com. Also available on the TuneIn Radio app on your smartphone. If you've got the TuneIn Radio app or the Sirius Satellite Radio app, you can listen to this show. Plus online at iHeart.com. iHeart Radio, the talk radio portal? I believe that's correct.
Yes, it is.
That's right. You can check that out as well. And we got so much stuff. I've been up much of the night, as have you, Mike, with the fallout of UFC 167. You actually more than I, since you had to do a radio show with Dave, which I believe you guys started recording at 5 o'clock a.m. Eastern. Is that correct?
That is correct. I know there's always you guys on the West Coast traditionally always complain about the East Coast starting times on a lot of things. Doing those shows with Dave, that's where the revenge comes in for all of us on the East Coast.
Yeah, it is. I remember those East Coast shows, and especially, I mean, it wasn't an East Coast show last night, but I've gone to the East Coast and had to do the show at like 5 o'clock a.m. And then worse, Dave inevitably gets his flight at 6 a.m., and so you got to rush, you got to do the show, you got to get it done, you got to get it uploaded, and then you got to be on a plane. It's complete insanity. So I have long since given up on heading out to these East Coast shows. But point of all of this, Mike, is that the first question, and perhaps the most important question, how did you score the GSP-Hendricks fight last night?
I scored it 3-2, Johnny Hendricks.
Did you really?
I did indeed. I gave Johnny Hendricks the first, second, and fourth rounds. I was a little surprised, actually. I thought he did. Again, I can understand how people did give the first round to GSP. But with that said, I thought Johnny Hendricks was clearly a step better. With that said, I think there's a lot of people who are probably upset and look at it as controversial and this and that. The fact of the matter is, Johnny Hendricks in his corner did himself no favors in that fight when it came to that third round, especially that he seemed to take the gas off. And then certainly in the fifth round where it was, I don't want to call it a Oscar De La Hoya, Felix Trinidad type of situation where Gil Clancy, the legendary boxing trainer who was in Oscar De La Hoya's corner, told him to kind of get on his bike and move because he had the fight in the bag. I get the, you know, feeling that's kind of what happened with Hendricks there. You never know what's going to happen. You never know what's going to happen in a title fight. You got to go out there and take it. And I just don't think, you know, he just didn't do enough in that fifth round to take it. And because of that reason, when these things happen, you leave yourself open to losing decisions, which is exactly what happened. For those who didn't see the fight, when you do see the fight, look, I don't know how you'll score the first round, but it was not highway robbery. This is not the worst decision ever or anything like that. As much as Dana White was fired up and upset about it after the fight, the bottom line is it was close enough where it could have gone either way. I don't agree with it, but it's certainly not the worst robbery ever.
I watched the fight at a sports bar for the first time ever. And it was pretty cool. It was fun being surrounded by a bunch of crazy people. Somebody on Twitter said, you know, what was the experience like, Brian? How did you like watching it at the sports bar? And it was, I responded, and this is a fact, it was pretty much just like watching it at my house. Because you have a bunch of people over, they all get drunk, and they all start screaming. It's exactly what happened here at the sports bar. And I was eating during the time. But it was fun because half of the people were there for GSP, and half of the people were there for Johnny Hendricks. And they were cheering for both guys. But the biggest reaction was at the end of the fight when they read the results. And boy, did you hear a reaction from this bar. I mean, there were people talking about how UFC was corrupt. The scores were just, I mean, things I cannot say on the radio, obviously, were said here in this sports bar. And it was funny because to me, I was watching it. I had it 1-3-5 for GSP. And if you want to give the first round to Johnny Hendricks, here's the thing. If you want to give the first round to Johnny Hendricks and give him the fight, fine. If you watch the fight and you think to yourself, okay, which man won the fight? If you want to tell me it was Johnny Hendricks, fine. In fact, if you just look at it as which man won the fight, Johnny Hendricks won the fight. If you told me after the fight, forget the rounds, forget everything, just write down on a piece of paper which man won, I would have written down Johnny Hendricks. But guess what? That's how it used to be done back in the day, but it's not done like that anymore because at some point they realized this is going to be a sport and we want this sport to catch on. And Mike, you know sports a lot better than I do, but what I do know about sports and sport fans is sports fans, they like numbers and they like statistics and they don't like a sport where the decision comes down to three judges who just write a name on a piece of paper. That was the mindset that they had in UFC. And so they came up with this 10-point must system. They adopted this 10-point must system. And under the 10-point must system, every round is scored individually. So who won the first round? Who won the second round? Who won the third round? It's a 10-point must system. The winner gets 10, and the loser gets 9 or less. Now, 9 or less in 95% of the cases means 9. Almost nobody, almost no judge is going to give a guy 8 points. You have to nearly kill the guy nowadays to get a 10-8 score. So it's always going to be one guy gets a 10 and one guy gets a 9. So at the end of the day, if you have a close fight and you feel that George St. Pierre barely won the first round and he won the third round and then he barely won the fifth round, even though he barely won two of those rounds, and even if you feel that Hendricks decisively won two of the rounds, it doesn't matter. The way the scoring system is set up, GSP wins that fight. So you can have a fight where one guy looks like he was completely destroyed, and the other guy looks like he didn't do anything. He was in the crowd watching, which is what happened at the post-fight press conference. The guy that looked like he got beat up can still win the fight based on the scoring system. So if you want to rant and rave that the scoring system sucks, be my guest, because I think the scoring system sucks. However, under that scoring system, GSP winning was completely an acceptable score. And one other thing, because I saw a million people talking about this on Twitter last night, UFC does not hire the judges. UFC has nothing to do with who the judges are, nor do they have anything to do with who the referees are in a commission state. If they're in Vegas, for example, if they're in California, the commission is going to assign the judges. The commission is going to assign the referee. So Dana White and UFC, they had nothing to do with who won that fight last night. In fact, Dana flipped his lid, as you noted in the post-fight press conference. He thought Johnny Hendricks won, and he was outraged. He cut a promo on not just Nevada, but the governor of Nevada. He wants to step in and save mixed martial arts in the state. He was outraged by this score. But at the end of the day, the score was a fair score under the current criteria, and George St. Pierre won. But again, if you think Hendricks won, if you think Hendricks got the first round, if you think Hendricks won the fight, that's all fine. But you can't complain about the score because that's the way the scoring system is set up.
You know, Dana, it was going nuts, as you said. He wanted governor intervention into the Nevada State Athletic Commission, which is a subject he's been railing about now for quite some time. I don't know what Brian Sandoval can really do at the end of the day. Look, this has been going on. It doesn't make it right. But this has been going on for years when it comes to boxing. And, you know, Dana had threatened last night that he's not going to bring any shows back to Nevada. He's, quote, in his words, and I'm paraphrasing here, effing scared to bring shows to Nevada because of situations like this. Now, there were 14,856 people there paying a $5.7 million gate, which is the reason that Dana White will never go away from Las Vegas. But, you know, if you want to do something, you really want to make a mark, then you just, you know, you announce you're not, even though you're located in Vegas, you're not going to have any shows in Vegas anymore, and try to put the pressure on these guys and try to, you know, put the pressure onto Nevada where, look, we'll train Herb Dean, we'll train the new referees, but you guys have no idea what's going on with this sport. And unless you do something like that, it's not going to change. And frankly, even if you do something like that, it's still not going to change because you still have three judges looking from different sides of the ring with a completely different perspective than you get at home on TV or even in the crowd there. Bad judging is bad judging, but you got three people deciding on who won a fight. There's going to be issues sometimes.
All right, we'll be back in just a moment talking more. Observer Live on the Sports Byline Broadcasting Network. We are back here on Wrestling Observer Live. Brian Alvarez here, WrestlingObserver.com. We're joined by Mike Sempervivi, also of WrestlingObserver.com. We are here every Sunday, 3 o'clock p.m. Pacific, 6 Eastern, on the Sports Byline USA Radio Network, Sirius Satellite Radio, Channel 92, 94, 794, XM Radio Channel 208, and streaming live worldwide on the internet at WrestlingObserver.com. You can check us out on the TuneIn Radio app on your smartphone, the Sirius Satellite Radio app, as well as iHeart.com, iHeartRadio, the talk radio portal. Search Wrestling Observer or Sports Byline. You can listen to the show live. And obviously, it not only streams live from WrestlingObserver.com, but the moment the show ends, a replay is available at WrestlingObserver.com for you to download and enjoy at your convenience. So make sure you check out WrestlingObserver.com. We are talking the scoring of mixed martial arts and the Johnny Hendricks, George St. Pierre fight from last night. And one thing I want to mention here, as much as Dana ranted and raved about the Nevada State Athletic Commission and how the governor needs to step in, at the end of the day, what is the governor, and you mentioned this, but I have a different take on it, what is the governor going to do? The scoring system, as I noted, the scoring system is such that the GSP win last night under the scoring system was an acceptable score. So Dana is actually ranting about something that was effectively used in the fight last night. I mean, if you think that the scoring should be done based on whose face looks worse, fine. Then you need to do something to completely change the criteria for scoring fights. You know, if you're Dana White and you just want to say, forget these commissions, I am going to create my own panel of judges. And the way it's going to work is at the end of the fight, you write down on a piece of paper who you think won. That's how judging is going to be done from now on. If you want to do that, fine. But if you're going to utilize the commission, then the issue is not your judges, because the judges they had last night used the criteria successfully. I mean, there's no two ways about it. I mean, you could agree, you can disagree about the first round. The first round was close. In fact, a lot of those rounds were close. but under the criteria, they made a decision which is an acceptable decision. You may not like it, but it's acceptable. So I don't know what he's wanting the Nevada governor to do, like throw out 10-point must. You know, he doesn't have to use 10, but he doesn't have to do anything. He owns the UFC. He runs the UFC. They could create their own judging panel if they wanted to that was employed by UFC. I mean, could they not?
That's what I say. And that's what, you know, Dave Meltzer last night. Well, no, you can't do that because it's, you know, if you're going to be, you know, a quote unquote sport and have, you know, the Nevada referees and things like that. And I...
Okay,
you know,
hold on. Wait. Who hires the NFL referees?
Well, exactly. It's the National Football League.
Okay.
The same way with Major League Baseball umpires or MLS or Premier League referees, the whole nine yards. You're exactly right.
So what's the problem with UFC doing it?
Good question.
You know, and
good
furthermore, now, let me say one thing, and I'll let you go on, just because I want to continue on this real quick. If Dave is concerned that UFC having their own judges and referees is going to be something that I guess the casual fan looks upon poorly, is that kind of the argument?
I would say that that's it, yes, and there's still,
okay.
You know, obviously,
okay.
The whole thing with how the fan looks at it.
Okay, well, let me just say this. If you look at my Twitter timeline, if you would have been in the sports bar with me, if you would have been in the crowd at UFC, when George St. Pierre was given that win, do you know what all those fans thought? They thought UFC was corrupt. They thought UFC screwed the fans. They don't even understand who hires the referees. They don't know that the Nevada State Athletic Commission hires the referees. They already think it's UFC. So if Dana is concerned that the Nevada State Athletic Commission is killing his sport, then just hire your own damn referees because most of the fans don't know anyway.
No, you're exactly right. You're exactly right. And it's, you know, you want to do a preemptive strike too, because Dan, you know, I want to, you know, this needs to be fixed before they kill this sport the same way they killed boxing. Well, no. And this would be the perfect excuse. If you did want to really shake up the system, you point this out to everywhere, and you point it out to every single athletic commission that covers and regulates things that, you know what, we're tired of C.J. Ross as an official. We're tired of Cecil Peoples as a referee and a judge. We're tired, you know, we're taking this in-house, and we're going to train our own guys because you obviously don't know boxing. You have put these people into MMA, whether, you know, however many can do it well or not. You throw them all out there and say, these people don't know what they're doing. We have to do this to save our sport because you're killing our sport and we're going to start changing it. But, you know, it's not the first time that this type of lip service has been out there. Well, we need to do something about it. You know, people have been saying that for years and nothing's ever changed. So unless you're going to do a dramatic shakeup, which does shake up the entire sport and will cause a lot of bad feelings in some states and will be issues in some states. Unless you're going to do that, I don't want to say just shut up, but this is where you're at. So, you know, don't complain about it. Try to do something to fix it, whether that's instituting a half-point scoring system, whether that's
no hate
whatever
half points.
It's going to be.
I hate half points. Listen. My thing is this.
I do too, but I mean, I'm using that as an example of don't just after every single show, you know, complain about what it is, then actually do something about it. Because as bad as it is there, you know, is the Texas or Michigan commissions, both of which are awful commissions, you know, how, again, this is, I don't know. It's just one of those things where obviously Dana's angry because there seemed to be a bad decision on the newest episode or the what's being taped of The Ultimate Fighter. There apparently is a bad decision on that, which put him in a really bad mood. And it started that press conference. And I mean, Dana ranted about three or four different things, one of which was being the NSAC and the judging. But I mean, it's again, if you're not going to do anything about it, just stop with this, because this was not highway robbery. This wasn't like, you know, Jake Shields and GSP, and they gave Jake Shields the decision. You know, it was that awful. It was a competitive first round, and I can easily see how people said, you know what? He didn't do enough to take it away from the champion. I thought GSP won that round.
Well,
period.
That's not a criteria.
It's a mountain out of a molehill.
That's not a criteria. I mean, I hear that from people, too, that, oh, you got to beat the champ. No, you don't. That's nothing to do with beating the champ. I mean, if you want to make it, about you have to beat the champ, that's fine. Put that into your rules. But when you're ranting and raving about the judges and this, it's not the judges' fault. They did this exactly correctly based on your 10-point must system. Your system sucks. It's not UFC system. They chose to adopt the system, but the system sucks. If you want to train some judges and say, listen, everybody, this is the way it's going to be. If the round is even, it's a 10-10. If one guy wins the round, it's a 10-9. If one guy dominates the round, it's a 10-8. And if one guy nearly finishes the other guy, it's a 10-7. Great. Try it. You know what I mean?
That's been a problem forever. That's been a problem forever. And there is a problem with judges that way because they are looked down upon as far as giving 10-10 rounds or 10-8 rounds, which is not fair and is not right because if a round is even, and again, you know, I understand what you're saying about, you know, to me, you do in some ways have to take, you know, if all things fall to even, you know, the way these guys are taught and the way they are looked upon, you know, that they almost are artificially giving it to another person because they are forced into, they don't want to see 10-10s and they don't want to see 10-8s. Why that is, I have absolutely no idea, but that is an asinine thing.
I remember watching the fight last night and I had GSP narrowly winning the first. And then they split rounds from that point forward. And I thought going into the fifth round that the fight was even. And with about a minute left, I thought, okay, GSP took this round and he won the fight. Then there was that quick reversal. I think Hendricks got a takedown and he started laying in somewhat of a beating. And I thought, oh my God, it's switching the other way. And then it switched again. And honest to God, when that thing was over, If I would have used like a 10-point must system based on, actually, I'd have to go back because, you know, the second round for Hendricks probably would have been a 10-8 under that criteria, but I would have given the last round an even score. And I guess if you would have given a 10-8 for Hendricks in the second and an even score in the fifth, then Hendricks wins that fight. If you would have given it an even score in the fifth round only and a 10-9 the rest of the round, then it would have been a draw. So there's a million ways you can go in a close fight, but again, it's all based on the scoring system you have in place. So either fix it, create your own, or I don't know, you just have to accept it. To me, it was not a problem with the judges last night, because as much as Dana White at the press conference, he said, if you think George St. Pierre won the fight, raise your hand. And the two people that raised their hand were Dave Meltzer, and Todd Martin, also of our website. They were the only two people that raised their hands. And when the fight was over, Dave had gone through press row and he had asked everybody, who do you think won that fight? And a number of them had said George St. Pierre. Dana was on such a rampage that most of these people did not raise their hands. They did not want to bother.
That was the thing. That was a very important thing that happened too, because if you look on Twitter, if you look at everybody who was not in that building last night, everybody ranted and raved and was very upset that Johnny Hendricks didn't win the fight. Yet, when you listen to the post-fight press conference, or I'm sorry, with the post-fight interview, it seemed to be a lot of people in that building most certainly believed that GSP won the fight. And then, you know, it comes out afterwards about how many people on press row did think GSP won. Yet, when Dana was out there going, well, do any of you guys think, you know, GSP won, that only Todd and Dave were the ones who actually had enough guts to raise their hands and actually say, you know, we thought he won the fight. And then they were immediately, you know, Dave more really than Todd, they were almost immediately chastised for it by Dana because he was going on this rant no matter what. And it's like, you know, why didn't anybody else, why is nobody saying anything here? Because it obviously in the building and on press row, where you're, you know, you're right there, right in front of the cage, where you see body punches land better, when you can actually hear how things land, not just see how they land, you know, et cetera, et cetera. It certainly seems like GSP won the fight, and there shouldn't be this much whining or controversy over it.
All right, we're going to head to a break. When we come back, we're going to talk about this entire event. There were five big fights on the main card. And some interesting results. I know that Todd destroyed me in our betting game, exactly like Rashad Evans destroyed Chael Sonnen, coincidentally. We're going to talk about that when we come back from the break. Wrestling Observer Live here on the Sports Byline Broadcasting Network. We are back here on Wrestling Observer Live. Brian Alvarez here, WrestlingObserver.com. We're joined by Mike Semper, VV, also of WrestlingObserver.com. We are here every Sunday, 3 o'clock p.m. Pacific, 6 Eastern, on the Sports Byline USA Radio Network, Sirius Satellite Radio, Channel 92, 94, 794, XM Radio Channel 208, and streaming live worldwide on the internet at WrestlingObserver.com. You can check us out on the TuneIn Radio app on your smartphone, the Sirius Satellite Radio app on your smartphone, as well as iHeart.com, the iHeart Radio website, the talk radio portal at iHeart.com. Check us out. Show also streams live from WrestlingObserver.com and moments after the show goes off the air, seconds after. In fact, I believe even a minute before the show goes off the air, you will be able to download this show from the front page of WrestlingObserver.com. So if you love this show and you tuned in late, head to WrestlingObserver.com when it's over and download the show for free to listen to at your convenience. We have tons of shows up at WrestlingObserver.com. We have a members-only area. It is $10.99 a month, and in that area is our archive. Thousands and thousands of shows. Every single show that we have ever done is available in our archives right now for just $10.99 a month. If you sign up right now, you can hear shows from 2005, 2006, 2007, all the way up through today, and it's not just Wrestling Observer Live. We do at least one show a day, sometimes two shows a day, and sometimes three shows a day. Sometimes I do three shows in a single day, 15 shows a week on an average week. All of those go into the archive. So if you're a fan of this show and you only get to hear it once per week, imagine having the opportunity to listen to two shows every single day. That's what you get when you sign up for WrestlingObserver.com. So head up there right now. On the right-hand side of the page, there's a giant microphone and a listing of our latest free radio shows. Download them, check them out, and if you like what you hear, give it a shot. You only have to do it for a month. And if you don't like it, you never have to do it again. But if you sign up for a month, you will be one of those people that sends me an email saying, Brian, I was a freeloader for 3 years and I finally decided to try it. And my God, I don't know why I didn't do this 3 years ago. There's a lot of stuff up there. And if you like this show, I guarantee you will love a subscription to WrestlingObserver.com. So head up there and check that out. All right, the UFC 167 show, Mike. This was the 20th anniversary of UFC. When's the last time you watched UFC 1?
Oh, God. It has been... It's probably been 2000 and... Let's see. I'm trying to think of when Yuji Nagata, New Japan pro wrestling professional wrestler, was laid to waste by Mirko Krokop. I think that was 2000. Believe it or not, that's what actually got me back into mixed martial arts, as bizarre as that sounds, was that. And I went back and I watched the old UFCs that I had seen on pay-per-view and then went on a run of watching all of the videos of all the pay-per-views I couldn't see because they were taken off pay-per-view with the help of John McCain for a very long time.
UFC 1, I watched it about 8 months ago, was so surreal. I mean, today it's a sport. Back then it was a fight. You had two dudes going in there. Most people had no idea what was going on. The announcers had no idea what was going on. The fans had no idea what was going on. A lot of the fighters had no idea what was going on. And they just got in a fight. These guys were just terrified going into the cage. I mean, these were, how can I say this without burying the guys today? These guys were like real fighters in the sense that they didn't know what would happen. You know, when you go into a UFC fight today, you go in there and there's a lot of pressure. You're very nervous. But you know that at the end of the day, there's a referee there. He's going to save your life. You know what the rules are. You know what the other guy can and cannot do. You prepared for a long time. That's not how it was at UFC 1, with the exception of maybe Hoist Gracie and Ken Shamrock. A lot of these guys just, they went in there and, man, what's going to happen? This guy's going to try and kill me. And they were fighting.
Well, and don't forget what the rules are. The rules were no biting, no eye gouging. But if you want to hit a man in the Johnson, yep, a zillion times over, you most certainly can.
Indeed, indeed. And this was the Wild West of fighting, which is funny because, you know, some people think of this as like the birthplace of mixed martial arts. But you'd had mixed martial arts dating back 100 years. In fact, significantly longer than that. But in this country, you know, early pro wrestling, there was something resembling mixed martial arts. I mean, the old days of catch as catch can wrestling. I mean, this was a very, very violent sport. And you could go all the way back to the original Olympiad, the Pancration event. They had three events in the original Olympiad. There was boxing, there was wrestling, and then there was Pancration. And Pancration was a mix of boxing and wrestling. And you could do submission holds. You could try to knock the guy out. I mean, it was very similar to today's mixed martial arts. And given the fact that there's only so many ways an elbow can bend the wrong way, I mean, they were probably doing something extremely similar to the UFC that we watch today. And it's just funny. It's only been 20 years and how everything has changed. It was an underground, mysterious, it's just so weird. I mean, in 20 years, it's not going to change like this. I mean, it's very modernized right now. I mean, I do think there are going to be some changes in terms of how, I think that as a result of guys getting older and getting a lot of, dementia symptoms, I think there are going to be some changes. I think that in 20 years, we're going to look back and go, my God, can you believe we gave a bonus for the best knockout? I just think that we're going to look back at that and just think that we were just crazy back here in 2013. But it's still going to exist in some form, and what form that is, I'm not sure, but I don't think we're going to have gigantic changes like we have from 1995 until today.
This is not, in fact, it's one of the worst things you could say to an MMA fan or to somebody that was following it because of what happened when John McCain said it and the ramifications of it. But I was a huge boxing fan. I was a huge professional wrestling fan. And I was a huge amateur wrestling fan. And I remember watching, I think it was it Gerard Gourdeau? I forget the name of the kickboxer where he faced off against the sumo. And I remember sitting there thinking, the sumo's going to get killed. And this is what a rudimentary, knowledge of kickboxing, where it's like, this isn't fair. In fact, what John McCain said in a lot of ways was right. It was like human cockfighting for this reason. You knew exactly, in hindsight now, you definitely knew what the whole thing was set up for. It was set up to show what jiu-jitsu is and what Brazilian jiu-jitsu and how great Gracie jiu-jitsu was. And they took a bunch of guys that never should have been facing off against each other. You can't have a sumo with no lateral movement facing off against a kickboxer. I know there are people who go, well, you didn't know that then. Yeah, you did. Yes, you did. You absolutely did. For years, if you even knew a little bit about wrestling, you knew how if you don't get punched, you can very easily take down a boxer. So as Art Jimerson stands there with one glove on, he is not doing himself any favors. And in a lot of ways, it was a carnival-esque cockfighting sport. Now, the irony of that is once it stopped becoming that realistically and the wrestlers took over, and the Severns came in, and you had, it went from the Tank Abbotts into the Dan Severns, and the wrestlers came in, Mark Coleman, and those guys, and everything. Maurice Smith, it changed. It completely changed. And by that point, they were already off TV in most places, and they were very difficult to see, and it kind of went quote unquote into the underground. But I tell you what, it's amazing in hindsight. I don't know how this could have gone any other way. And as bad as those early years were, as tough as those early years were, how everything went down the line and how things went in Japan through the early, the late 90s and the early 2000s with K-1, which is a different style of fighting, but the Pride Fighting Championships and Pancrase and Deep and all these other promotions, for what anybody says right now about how bad the business is and the UFC runs too many shows and all that sort of stuff, and I'm not going to – it's not the place to debate that now, but it's kind of – it feels good as a fight fan that Fox started a ESPN equivalent in their mind. Obviously, it's not there yet, but they started their very own sports network, and essentially it is a default UFC Ultimate Fighting Championships MMA station. There might be too much programming out there and on there, but I never thought this would happen in 2005, let alone back in 1995 and 1993. It's amazing the way it's gone.
What is going on with GSP?
Good question. I don't know, and I I'll say this. I can understand from Dana White's point of view, and I think he has changed his tune since then, most certainly changed it seemed to be when GSP walked into the press conference afterwards. you know, athletes who have been getting punched in the head and who are very emotional. You know, I'm surprised that weird comments don't happen more after fights and there's not more incidents after fights or after really any sporting event. You got big jacked up dudes who are jacked up and emotional in the whole nine yards. And obviously he's had something playing on him. And I thought Dana White's response to GSP, what GSP said about possibly wanting to hang it up for a while, I understand why he felt, you know, he obviously did not see this coming. Nobody did. But when it happened, his rants afterwards, and again, he had been in this bad mood, he was just bearing GSP. And it's like you could tell in that post, you know, fight interview in the octagon that obviously GSP was emotional. Obviously, he had something on his mind. I thought it was Dana should just take a step back. He doesn't have to be happy about it or how happy GSP went about it. But his burial of GSP, when you don't know what's going on in his life, and GSP didn't say anything about that. He did a little in the post-fight press conference just saying it's personal issues, and I even had trouble, you know, sleeping leading into this fight. I want to get some things together. You know, again, it's kind of a slap in the face to Hendricks from a sporting point of view in that you want to see that rematch right away because it was such a great fight. But I thought how it was handled by Dana White really sucked. And there was a reporter that asked in the press conference that, you know, should it be like NASCAR where these guys basically go to a trailer and they get a chance to cool out, calm down, and think a little bit. And then they come, you know, because again, you're getting punched in the head. It's emotional. You were just in a war for 25 minutes and, you know, at your wit's end and everything. Honest to God, if anybody should do that, it should probably be Dana, because his rants on GSP, again, we don't know what could have happened. As far as you know, and this, you know, this obviously didn't happen, but, you know, GSP's five kids that we didn't know about could have been in a bad car accident, and he didn't want to say anything or let that go. You just don't know what could have happened to the guy that made him like that. It was something that he never does. It was very, you know, just a complete turn away, 90-degree turn away from his personality and what he says normally. I just thought he got jumped on by Dana White way too much. Now, Dana did change his tune a little bit later on, as well as GSP, because it seems to be that he talked to Dana White and his people talked to Dana White, and it's not that big of a deal where he's got to step away and retire before he faces Johnny Hendricks. So it looks like we will get more of an immediate rematch. But I thought how that was handled, because this isn't Nick Diaz. This is not, you know, you pick a guy on who it could be. It's GSP. And I thought how that whole thing went down was very, very poor. And to be honest, obviously there's a little part of me that wants to know what's going on that is going to shelf GSP. But with that said, I'm also not a TMZ type of guy for the most part. I'm not a Deadspin kind of guy. So I don't really care what's going on in GSP's life. If he's got something he needs to go take care of, go take care of it. It's really not my business.
I think I know why what his issue is, and he has actually talked about this publicly, and this will actually play into as we continue talking about this, a number of different things, not the least of which is how are things going to change in the next 20 years of UFC, because they've changed a lot, and like I said, I don't think there are going to be major changes, but I think there are going to be small changes that are going to have a big effect throughout all of mixed martial arts. So we're going to talk about this when we come back from the break. You are listening to Wrestling Observer Live here on the Sports Byline Broadcasting Network. We are back here on Wrestling Observer Live. Brian Alvarez here, WrestlingObserver.com. We're joined by Mike Sempervivi, also of WrestlingObserver.com. We are here every Sunday, 3 o'clock p.m. Pacific, 6 Eastern, on the Sports Byline USA Radio Network, Sirius Satellite Radio, Channel 92, 94, 794, XM Radio Channel 208, and streaming live worldwide on the internet at WrestlingObserver.com. A couple of weeks ago, George St. Pierre did an interview, and he started out by saying, if my camp heard what I was going to say right now, they would go nuts, and they would scream at me for talking about this publicly, but I'm going to do it anyway. And what he said was, I believe I have obsessive compulsive disorder. And he said he had not gone in to get it, like a formal diagnosis. But he said that there are things I do in my life where I feel like I'm just obsessive compulsive. I feel crazy. And he kind of mentioned this at the press conference as well. He said, I'm going crazy. I can't sleep at night. And he talked about how when he got the win in his last fight, I think it was Condit his last fight? Pretty sure it was Condit. He goes, the moment they raised my hand, my mind immediately switched to Johnny Hendricks. And he just said, I have obsessed about this. It has consumed every moment of my day. It just takes over my life. And when I saw him in the cage after his fight last night, I thought, this guy's done. This guy is retiring. This guy was planning to retire one way or the other, because he'd made weird comments in the weeks leading up to this fight about, you know, people had been asking if he was going to face Rory McDonald, and he said, well, you know, it's not something we're going to have to worry about. You're all going to know about this soon enough. And as soon as I heard that, I was like, this dude's done. And I thought he was done when he was in the cage. And I thought that what it was he is finished, but he probably realizes that, you know what, I may decide in a few years that I want to come back. And I don't want to be the guy that retires and then unretires. So I'm not going to say I'm retired. I'm just going to say I'm hanging up the gloves for a while. But I think in his mind, he's done. And we'll talk about this more when we come back from the break. The future of George St. Pierre. You're listening to Wrestling Observer Live on the Sports Byline Broadcasting Network. How's it going, everybody? Brian Alvarez here on Wrestling Observer Live, where you're here for the next hour talking pro wrestling and mixed martial arts, as we are every Sunday, 3 o'clock p.m. Pacific, 6 Eastern, on the Sports Byline USA Radio Network, Sirius Satellite Radio, Channel 92, 94, 794, XM Radio, Channel 208, and streaming live worldwide on the internet at WrestlingObserver.com. We have spent an hour talking the UFC 20th anniversary show, George St. Pierre versus Johnny Hendricks, the scoring system, and the future of George St. Pierre. I think he's done. And Mike, you seem to think that he's just going to take some time off and return. Any thoughts on the idea that he has got an obsessive compulsive disorder, as he himself has claimed in a few recent interviews, and that this is something, the pressure has finally got to him and he's done?
I know some people with OCD, some severe in some cases, and you know, it wouldn't surprise me. It seems to be that lots of successful people who are very driven have, you know, either like an ADD or ADHD or an OCD type of thing. I mean, it's just
because that's again, what he said. Actually, he goes, "That's why I'm so great. It's because of this."
Yeah, I mean, it's one of those things when you're that uber competitive and you become that focused. The problem with that is it does affect other parts of your life, and it does affect other things as well. And I just can't see, again, he's got enough money to do it and everything, but he seems to love the sport that much where maybe, again, he takes a step back, but is he ready to retire? I don't know. I don't know him that well. I don't get a chance to talk to him or anything like that, so I couldn't tell you how he feels or get a gut feeling off of it, but you know, if he chose to hang it up right now, I guess I wouldn't be shocked. You know, now would be a great time to do it before you've suffered, you know, noticeable head injuries or something like that. Obviously, he's been punched in the head enough. You don't know what's going to go on later on in life or anything. But, you know, if he chooses to do it now, great. It's tough for me to believe that he will, just because, again, until I see him walk away, it's hard to believe a fighter truly walks away until they walk away for good.
All right, we are going to head to our break. When we come back, we've got a lot more to talk about, including Rory McDonald hype train derailed. Wrestling Observer Live on the Sports Byline Broadcasting Network. We are back here on Wrestling Observer Live. Brian Alvarez here, WrestlingObserver.com. We are joined by Mike Sempervivi, also of WrestlingObserver.com. We're here every Sunday, 3 o'clock p.m. Pacific, 6 Eastern, on the Sports Byline USA Radio Network, Sirius Satellite Radio, Channel 92, 94, 794, XM Radio Channel 208, and streaming live worldwide on the internet at WrestlingObserver.com. You can check us out on the TuneIn Radio app on your smartphone. That's the TuneIn Radio app, the Sirius Satellite Radio app as well on your smartphone, online at iHeart.com, the iHeartRadio Talk Radio portal, as well as WrestlingObserver.com, where we not only stream live, but moments after this show goes off the air, the show will be available for you to download at WrestlingObserver.com, a free download to listen to at your convenience. So if you missed the first hour of the show, no big deal. In an hour, go up to WrestlingObserver.com, hit that play button, and it'll start right over at the beginning. So check it out at WrestlingObserver.com. We are talking UFC. And Mike, there were a lot of weird stuff with GSP lately. He did the Joe Rogan Experience podcast. Did you hear this interview?
I did not, actually. Was it good? I can believe it was very good.
He had a lot of interesting things to say about aliens. GSP has done a few interviews, actually, where he's talked about his belief in aliens. And he mentioned that since he was a child, he had experienced missing time. And he said that it had been happening to him recently. He said that sometimes he's driving down the road, or he wakes up in the middle of the night, and he looks at the clock, and he looks away, and when he looks back, 2 hours have passed. And, you know, this is something that sometimes when people believe they've been abducted by aliens, they say the same thing, but it also sounds a little bit like there could be issues that he's having with his memory, which would be very concerning. And the reason I bring all of this up is because, you know, first off, everybody online has been speculating about it ever since he announced that he had personal issues and was going to hang up the gloves. But the time is going to come, Mike, where a lot of the big stars of the 2006 boom period, and we've already seen it with a lot of the stars from the earlier, the first generation of big-time mixed martial arts stars.
Gary Goodridge,
perfect example. They're slowing down. And they're having problems. And I know that, I mean, George St. Pierre seems very sharp right now. But when I read online, people say, well, do you watch George St. Pierre fights? He doesn't get hit all that hard. He doesn't get hit that many times. I kind of think it's not how many times you get hit in the fight. You know, we have a generation of guys, and George St. Pierre isn't one of them, but guys like Vanderlei Silva and many, many others. We have a generation of guys that are going really, really hard in training. And that means they're doing this every day. Some of them are training without headgear. In fact, a scary number of them are training without headgear. And I just think that it's going to get really scary in a few years here. There's going to be more and more guys that they're going to be doing interviews, and it's just going to be like, man, this is no good. And I don't know if it's going to lead to changes in how people train. I certainly hope so. When I talked earlier about changes coming in the next generation, I think a lot of it is going to have to do with how people train and the safety measures they take when they train and avoidance of these issues that are going to lead to some really rough later years for a lot of these fighters.
Plus, the fact is you never know. I don't know, Ryan, I know you're not a huge boxing fan or anything, but have you heard of the movie Raging Bull?
I have heard of Raging Bull, yes.
With Robert De Niro, and you know, the whole thing's based around Jake LaMotta. Now, Jake LaMotta's right now 92 years old. I don't know exactly what health he's in, but as of a couple years ago, you know, he was still fine, you know, as far as having his mental faculties and all that sort of stuff. And he had, you know, the six wars with Sugar Ray Robinson and you know, a zillion one other fights. But then you look at some other guys who have only had 10 fights who have suffered, you know, terrible brain injuries, and it just you never know what's going to happen. And that's the biggest thing with a fight. It's anything with any athlete. JerMichael Finley of the Green Bay Packers, who's a tight end, suffered a spine injury, and this is coming after I think it was a concussion that he had gotten, where his kids, you know, were saying, hey dad, why do you still do this? You've got the money, why don't you stop? And then he suffers this injury, and now he's, you know, what is he going to do? Does he come back? You know, does he? I can't. You never know. And
well,
I know
let me throw out another name from pro wrestling. Some of you will remember this, Masato Tanaka. Back in the heyday of
yes.
ECW, this guy took so many hard, unprotected chair shots to the head. Quite frankly, he should be dead or close to it. He's fine. However, it is, and I asked Chris Nowinski about this because he was on the show, and I was a wrestler for a long time, and I was always concerned because, you know, he had mentioned things like when you head a soccer ball, that minor impact of heading a soccer ball, you may be doing damage to your brain. Every bump, you may be doing damage to your brain. I remember hearing that, and I was like, dear God, I took a lot of bumps. And so I asked him the question because I'd never suffered a concussion. And some people, like, you know, Nowinski is a good example. Or I think Mike Quackenbush mentioned that he's had like over a dozen concussions, that sort of deal. And so I asked him, I said, is it possible that everybody is different in the sense that some people, I don't know if they have more fluid around their brain. I don't know if maybe I don't know what it would be, but some people are significantly more prone to concussions than other people. And he said, yes, that is exactly what it looks like. And I don't think there is a way to determine your ability to withstand punishment. But I do think that if at some point down the road some sort of technique comes along where you can determine a person's susceptibility to concussions, I see a day where maybe you have to take this test, and if you look like you're someone who is prone to concussions, you're not allowed to participate in these sports.
Well, yeah. I mean, look, football, you know, there's Pop Warner football, Tiny Mites football that begins at 5, 6, 7 years old. And, you know, that was the whole thing in League of Denial where it's like, well, what age should kids probably start playing football if they're going to do it? And it's like high school when their brains are actually fully formed or formed enough and there's, you know, there's enough weight to the brains and everything. And it's, you know, will that ever happen? I don't know, you know, but, you know, as you talked about earlier on, I mean, we're seeing it in football. We see it with hockey a little bit. We've heard it with soccer as far as the heading goes. Yeah, I don't know what they can do. I don't know what you do to make fighting safer. Do you go to headgears? Do headgears really help? Do bigger gloves really help when you're still, again, getting hit in the head and you just don't know how each person takes each thing? You just don't know. It's interesting, but it's where you can't. A lot of people I know bash the Black Zillion camp, and I understand, you know, from some aspects of it, but there's an aspect of, well, you know, they've already made their money and they're being too safe and they don't, you know, train like they used to. Well, should you? You know, is it once you hit a certain point, should you? And GSP's in that too, where if you've made your money and you're a young guy, I mean, it's not like there's tons of jobs. I mean, even in the NFL, they basically got like this NFL camp now that you go to in Mount Holly, New Jersey at NFL Films where they're training announcers and they're training certain guys. You know, the UFC doesn't have that where you have a zillion to one announcers now. I mean, there's Florian and guys like that. But what are your job prospects if you're not going to be a trainer or buy a gym or something like that after the age of 35? You have 30 to 50, you know, plus more years left. What are you going to do with yourself? And if you don't have any faculties at all at 45, what are you going to do once you're 75? So I don't, you know, we're going to start seeing it happen. And I understand, again, that's a change that a lot of old MMA fans don't like as far as like what John Jones did, you know, with Chael Sonnen. I'm not taking this fight. I don't have to take this fight. You know, you're throwing this on me. That was an old school way of doing things. We're doing it this way now. You know, it kind of, that's one of the things it falls into. It's a new age and there's new athletes and there's new ways to look at things. And again, there's a great example. I mean, look how many brain injuries were probably caused in Pride by bait and switch booking and things like that. I mean, again, Goodridge, you know, and I don't know how Don Fry or Mark Coleman or how any of those guys are, but again, it'll be interesting to see, to track them. And really, if Don Fry made $5 million in the first couple of UFCs, would he have stuck around for as long as he did? I don't know. I don't think so. And I don't think, you know, and again, should any athlete, and can we begrudge them for that? I don't believe we can. We're not in their shoes. You know, maybe he wants to see his grandkids, you know, later on down the line and not risk it. I just, it'll be interesting to see the way that it goes, but I don't think you can begrudge GSP or anybody if they do take their money and retire. Sure, as a fan, I'm missing out on some fights, but I'm not going to be the one missing out on my life because I take too many shots.
If I were GSP, I'd take my money and retire to Hawaii. I'm telling you that right now. All right, we're going to do a break. When we get back, more news. Wrestling Observer Live on the Sports Byline Broadcasting Network. We are back here on Wrestling Observer Live. Brian Alvarez here, WrestlingObserver.com. We're joined by Mike Sempervivi, also of WrestlingObserver.com. We are here for the next 40 minutes talking pro wrestling and mixed martial arts as we are every Sunday, 3 o'clock p.m. Pacific, 6 Eastern on the Sports Byline USA Radio Network, Sirius Satellite Radio, Channel 92, 94, 794, XM Radio Channel 208, and streaming live worldwide on the internet at WrestlingObserver.com. We have been talking UFC, and we haven't even run down the card yet. A lot of talk about the future of George St. Pierre, the decision in the main event. But Mike, I agreed with Dave Meltzer and Todd Martin and a few others in press row about the main event. However, I was told that Dave gave Rory McDonald the decision in that fight. Baffled.
He got me there.
Robbie Lawler won that fight. And this is the second fight in a row that Rory McDonald has just shown me nothing.
Well, you know, here's the thing in this one was, and I'm not going to say I saw it coming or anything, but it's like that was one of those fights where if you had a bunch of extra money because of what the line was, and, you know, not even a bunch, but you got 50, 100 bucks and you want to throw it out there as a risk. Robbie Lawler wasn't really that bad of one. I mean, Robbie Lawler seems to have gotten, I'm not going to say better, but he is far more well-rounded now than he was, you know, 10 years ago. And he was a Miletic guy, if I remember correctly, right? With, all those guys. I mean,
now that you mention it, when Pat Miletic saw that Robbie Lawler was the underdog in this fight, he said, "I am placing the first bet that I have ever placed as a fighter, as a commentator, as an announcer. I have never bet on a fight before, but I'm putting my money on Robbie Lawler." That's how confident he was, and he won.
And I don't, you know, it was, I'm not saying he was, Rory McDonald was the perfect guy for him or anything, because Rory McDonald's an amazing athlete. He really is. With that said, there's nothing that you could have thrown at Robbie Lawler that he hasn't already seen. I mean, he started this in 2001. I mean, he has been around. He has fought, you know, high-level guys, even though they weren't exactly quote-unquote high-level at the time. He's been fighting with a spotlight on him for years now, and he takes good shots. He's relatively unflappable. And the biggest thing with him right now, more than any of that, is he's got such an incredible confidence. I mean, that coming back to the UFC and knocking out Koscheck in the way that he did, and then going and blowing out Bobby Volker, you know, earlier on this summer. I mean, he's got a ton of confidence right now. It's kind of like Johnny Hendricks in the GSP fight. I mean, after that first round, he knew that he was into this thing, and he knew he had the confidence. And Robbie Lawler walked into his last three fights feeling like that. I think maybe with Koscheck, it could have been, you know, there was nothing to lose. But when it came to, I mean, this fight, he looked great. He's got so much confidence in his ability and in his hands and everything. And I don't know, you know, I really don't know how Dave or anybody else gave McDonald the fight. Then again, I wasn't there ringside or anything, but I mean, it seemed to certainly be 2-1, you know, easily for Robbie Lawler. And it's interesting to see what you would do with him, because that was a big thing coming out of this fight was, well, what do you do now for Johnny Hendricks if GSP does take some time off? And I thought of two things. I think from a sporting point of view, I believe Carlos Condit is scheduled to face the immortal Matt Brown coming up here in early December. And I think in theory, on paper, with the run that Brown has been on, with the position that Condit's in, I think you have the winner of that face off against Hendricks for the interim title or for the vacated title. I think that's the sporting way to do it. With that said, if you just ask me as a fan, well, what would you do? Give me Johnny Hendricks and Robbie Lawler right now, please, with the way that Robbie Lawler is fighting, because it would be, again, it would be a fun war. Now, I think maybe what his problem is he's again, and he's always been a boxer, so it's not to say he's too reliant on his fists is kind of a silly thing to say. With that said, he's become very reliant on his fists, and even though he did look good against McDonald, you know, the wrestling of Johnny Hendricks, I think he'd have to probably switch it up a little bit, because to stand there and bang with Hendricks, I think, would be a mistake. But then again, hey, look, you never know. It's been a hell of a revival for Robbie Lawler. I don't know if you can have a comeback player of the year in MMA, but it's certainly arguable this year with the years he's had so far coming back to the UFC.
I think that Robbie Lawler, I mean, you know, part of it is just that he's been fighting forever, and so he seems like he's an old man, but he's only, like, I think 32. You know, he just started very young, and I think he should get a title shot. I know watching this fight that even before the decision, I mean, it was like in the second round, I was just watching it and thinking, okay, God bless these people, but who are these people that want to see GSP versus Rory McDonald? Because I don't see Rory McDonald giving GSP any sort of fight. He just did nothing, and this is the second fight in a row he's just done nothing. And I mean, once he lost, it's like, that's all out the window. you know, no talk right now of GSP and Rory McDonald because they both, GSP may retire and Rory McDonald lost. So that's out of the question. And
I think there's an overhype that happens. And again, we're all guilty of it to some point because you see this rising star and he beats, you know, Nate Diaz and he beats BJ Penn and he beats Ellenberger. You know, but it's like he lost to
yeah,
lost
but BJ
Lawler.
Penn. Hold on a second.
Oh, I know what you're saying.
Nate
but
Diaz,
I mean,
yes. I don't know. The last
because
two.
He's beating a name, and you go, okay, well, he's on his way up because he beat this name, and you know he should have beaten the name, and it was a test for him, and here we go. You know, sometimes that's not the case. I mean, Carlos Condit is, you know, really difficult to beat, and obviously he loses to Robbie Lawler right now. And yeah, it's two fights in a row where he hasn't looked good, but I think. He's probably been overhyped a little bit. And with that said, I don't think anybody can now dismiss him out of hand. It's, you know, it's what he does from this point forward. But we tend to overhype guys in fighting and in all sports a little bit too much early. And I think generally we tear them down maybe a little bit quicker than we should too. You know, you look at that 170-pound division on paper, you know, McDonald's still beating a lot of it, if not most of it. So
yeah, but hold on. The Nate Diaz, I'll give you Nate Diaz, but BJ Penn going up to 170 to fight Rory McDonald, I mean, it was just outmatched. The Ellenberger fight, Ellenberger did nothing in that fight. That fight was absolutely horrendous. And now Robbie Lawler here beat Rory McDonald. So, I don't know. I have not been on the hype train with Rory McDonald, and I feel justified in that today.
Well, and he had that. I mean, again, he had that great fight with Condit too. You know, so early in his UFC run. I mean, it's again, you look at the rest of that division, and I don't know. Again, I don't know what else you could do. Obviously, Johnny Hendricks is the number one contender. Carlos Condit's a firm number two now. Whether Robbie Lawler deserves to jump right up there, I don't know. But you know, again, Condit and Brown. Again, that's going to be an eliminator, and no matter what happens in that fight, because, I believe that's scheduled for December 14th. I can't remember when it is. They've got so many shows going on right now. Whatever happens, it's a great door to open up for Robbie Lawler, and it's probably a good door to open up for Tyron Woodley, too, because, again, Damon Maia, I don't think anybody's beating down the door for him to see a title shot, although now he's 3-1 at 170 pounds. Martin Campman, no, you know. Jordan Mean, obviously, not enough time. And Hector Lombard, we still have to see how it goes as far as he goes and everything. But, you know, Tyron Woodley, again, he hurt Josh Koscheck with everything. And, you know, it'll be interesting to see what his next matchup in because, I don't know, do you put him in against a top six or seven guy in the 170-pound division? I would probably say yes. So it'll be interesting to see what his next fight is going to be, too.
Chael Sonnen at the post-fight press conference was awesome. He talked about Rashad beat him in the first round with a rear naked choke, and I mean, just
badly.
Once he got on top of him, I mean, you know, Chael had nothing, and he gave him his back. And anyway, he said, "I made one mistake. I fought a better fighter." It's just like he admitted he just got destroyed, and he goes. You know, I think that, 185 may be my best weight. These 205-pounders, they get me in certain positions that I just can't get out of. And that's what happened. He got put in side control. He got put on his back by a big guy, and he just couldn't get out. That's what happened. So he got destroyed, which also caused me to lose my betting game with Todd Martin, which was unfortunate. And Tyron Woodley just absolutely completely destroyed Josh Koscheck. So that was pretty much the highlights of the main card there. And I guess the only other UFC news we have to get into here very quickly before we jump into a lot of pro wrestling news that we got to squeeze into 20 minutes is Jon Jones. They announced that Jon Jones was going to be fighting Glover Teixeira in March. And the very next day, they announced it. Now he was not going to be facing Glover Teixeira. Actually, I think it was February they announced it. But Dana White believes he's going to be fighting in March, and I guess Jon Jones told him that he had some sort of injury and would not be able to fight in February. And I guess this may have been another one of those deals where they announced a fight before they cleared it with both guys, because I don't see any other reason they announced a fight one day and then had to cancel it the next day.
Hey, it very, very well could be possible, and I don't Yeah, there's no blame to put out there. I mean, they didn't really, you know, announce when it was going to be or anything. Just, you know, in February, I know they got a bunch of shows set up, you know, for that, you know, for the month and everything. They got a bunch of shows set up, period, in the first quarter of the year. But John Jones got beat up, and I think mentally playing on his mind too. I mean, he's got a lot to get back together again before he faces off against Gustafson for a second time or whoever else it is that he's going to face. It doesn't really surprise me that he wants a little more extended time off and that he's not ready. It's something they need to stop doing. If there's no names on paper or anything like that, I mean, you can float it out there. You can have somebody in the organization talk about it. But when you basically announce the fight without anybody, you know, agreeing to it, you know, even in principle, again, it's not good it's just not good public image wise.
All right. Quick question. Last 5 seconds. Buy rate for last night's show.
750.
All right, we'll be back in just a moment, everybody. You're listening to Wrestling Observer Live on the Sports Byline Broadcasting Network. We are back here on Wrestling Observer Live. Brian Alvarez here, WrestlingObserver.com. We're joined by Mike Sempervivi, also of WrestlingObserver.com. We are here for the next 20 minutes talking pro wrestling and mixed martial arts, as we are every Sunday, 3 o'clock p.m. Pacific, 6 Eastern on the Sports Byline USA Radio Network, Sirius Satellite Radio, Channel 92, 94, 794, XM Radio Channel 208, and streaming live worldwide on the internet at WrestlingObserver.com. You can check us out on the TuneIn Radio app on your smartphone, the Sirius Satellite Radio app on your smartphone, as well as iHeart.com, iHeartRadio, the talk radio portal up at iHeart.com. 60 million subscribers have access to this radio show. And if you add it all up, the most listened to wrestling / mixed martial arts radio show on the planet. Make sure you check us out at WrestlingObserver.com as well. We have a members only area. If you like this show, if you like Wrestling Observer Live, and you only get to hear it one time per week, you are missing out. First off, if you go to WrestlingObserver.com and you scroll down the right hand side of the page, right there by that giant microphone, 4 free radio shows updated regularly. 4 free radio shows. That's a lot of bonus content that you can listen to if you only get to hear the show once per week. Plus, that is a preview of what is in our members-only area. $10.99 a month to sign up. And if you sign up, not only do you get daily radio shows, but we sometimes do 2 to 3 radio shows every single day. Up to 15 shows per week are available in the members-only area. And not only do you get all of those new shows, every show that we have ever done dating back to 2005 is available in the archives right now. Thousands and thousands and thousands of hours of audio are available in the members-only area at WrestlingObserver.com. So again, if you like this show and you only get to hear once per week, you are missing out. Sign up, $10.99, download the shows. Only do it for a month if you want to. If you don't like it, you never have to sign up again. But I guarantee that if you like this show, you will love a subscription. So head up to WrestlingObserver.com, check out the free shows, sign up, and as they say, join the fun. Mike, we've got Raw tomorrow. It is the go-home show for the Survivor Series, which is next Sunday. We will be broadcasting prior to the Survivor Series. We'll run on the entire card on next week's show for about an hour before the pay-per-view starts. As of today, we are 8 days before Survivor Series, Mike. And there are only 3 official matches. Randy Orton versus The Big Show for the WWE title, John Cena versus Alberto Del Rio for the world title, and CM Punk and Daniel Bryan versus the Wyatt family in a tag team match. That's it. How do you think this show is going to do?
Probably not very well, to be honest with you. I mean, the only way I think it does well is because of the fact that people have been sitting on their wallets now for like the last 3 or 4 months as far as buying pay-per-views that maybe they buy this one. You know, you talk about that third match with Punk and Bryan against the Wyatts. I mean, realistically, that could change by the time that the next 48 hours, 24 to 48 hours here are over. I mean, even that match may change. It's... it's painful. And I know that they would say, well, you look, you're only going to buy the show for the top, you know, two matches anyway. And they've done this before where they're only listing four or five matches, and then the other three or four are added on later on because nobody cares about them, or they haven't made up their mind yet. But it don't tell me that it doesn't affect things. What is the reason to buy this show? I mean, what could they possibly do tomorrow that really would make you want to spend your hard-earned $60 on this show, especially when you, again, for those people out there that would order the UFC, you got a Pacquiao fight coming up next week, which I don't think is going to do too well, but, you know, why do you want to see Randy Orton in the Big Show? The Big Show looked like a punk. He's been embarrassed. He looked like a fool, both mentally and physically on Monday night. You got John Cena and Alberto Del Rio. Sure, Alberto Del Rio hit him with a table or whatever it was and you know, put his arm in a chair and stomped on it and put the arm breaker on Friday, but does anyone really believe that John Cena is going to lose that match to Alberto Del Rio? Of course not. And then you got Punk and Bryan in the Wyatts, which, you know, it's a test to see where the Wyatts are. I mean, most certainly, because you know Punk and Bryan are going to be good, and you figure the match is going to be decent because of who's in it on that side, and I have faith in Luke Harper as well. But with that said, this isn't a pay-per-view quality match. It's not. It's period. It's not. So they can blame this on whatever they want. They can come up with some random magic thing. They can blame it on Daniel Bryan again, which they've seemed to kind of put on at his and Punk's feet over the way that things have went as far as the pay-per-view buys. But creatively, it's stupid. I mean, that's at the end of the day. We talked about it last week, how stupid it was. And again, yeah, there's some good stuff on the show or anything, but you know, it, for the most part, it's 3 hours of convoluted nonsense. And again, will people pay for it just because it's the Survivor Series? Yeah, they probably will. But if it does badly, don't blame it on the name, the Survivor Series. Don't blame it on the guys in the matches. You know, look in the mirror and blame it on yourselves and blame it on your booking team, because you've given nobody a reason to order this thing. And frankly, I don't care how good this go-home show is, I seriously doubt, unless it's a week of amazing programming, you know, again, what's the reason to watch this? I'd rather watch Charlotte Flair's ring introduction on NXT every, you know, far more than I want to see anything on SummerSlam
what?
Right now.
Charlotte's ring introduction?
It's great. Have you seen this thing now that she's all bad girl?
I haven't seen the bad. I just watched the show last night where she turned heel.
Yes.
I have not seen her her entrance since she turned heel.
Well, she, you know, wasn't really. She did it in this match. I mean, when you should have known, when you're doing the cartwheel on the way in and you slither on into the ring like that, you knew she was going to end up bad. You know, Bayley is just too dumb for public consumption or for anybody in NXT. She got what she deserved. Good on Charlotte and Sasha Banks and Summer Rae.
You know what I got to say about NXT? The one thing that I really love about the show,
French Stallion.
Well, besides French Stallion, I hadn't seen any of the taping results. And so I was watching the show last week, and I saw the backstage deal they did with Summer Rae and Charlotte and Bayley and Sasha Banks, and I just thought, Charlotte's turning on Bayley. I mean, she's going to turn on her. She's going to turn on her, and she's going to join the heels. It makes sense to me. And the very next week, that is exactly what happened. And I just love that it is a pro wrestling program where they book logically. It all makes sense, and you can kind of predict where they're going, and you're usually right, and there's nothing wrong with that. If Bayley would have turned heel on Charlotte, I would have been infuriated, because that makes no sense. It made much better sense for Charlotte to turn. That's exactly what they did. Now, on that note, seeing as how you're more excited for the Charlotte ring entrance in Survivor Series, and based on your rant, you seem pretty down on the show, Mike.
Well, I mean, hit me with something tomorrow night, and maybe I'll get jacked up about it. But I was looking more forward to a possible, like, Wyatt's Shield thing against, you know, that traditional Survivor, and we're probably going to get.
Well, hold on. Let me ask you about that. Everybody who watched Raw saw the main event angle where they had the Wyatts and the Shield square off together. And then they teased a fight, and then they turned on Daniel Bryan and Punk, and then the Usos ran in, and Cody Rhodes and Dustin ran in, and so you had what appeared to be the setup for an eight man of some sort, maybe elimination match, maybe a Survivor Series rules, maybe just a tag match, And then they just dropped it all, like it never even happened. And normally, when they announce a match officially on WWE.com, they don't change it. Usually when it's announced officially, that's the official match. But I do think it's possible, in this case, that tomorrow on Raw, they decide, my God, look at this card. Randy Orton and The Big Show, Cena, Alberto Del Rio, and then this tag match, that's the top of our card, is ridiculous. And I can see them deciding to make that an 8-man instead. Now, if they did that, Mike, would that increase your interest in the show?
It would be a little bit more fun. I definitely think it would, because you've already played off the fact that the Wyatts have, you know, some beef with the Shield, and the Shield doesn't work for anybody. You don't want to deal with anybody. You don't want to tag with anybody. They don't even want to tag with themselves right now, the way it's been teased. So I think if you have that against, you know, again, whatever you're going to do with the Usos and Goldust and Cody or whatever it would be, I think it would be. It would add some intrigue, because you have a bunch of guys that would be probably pretty good working the when we were kids style of Survivor Series match. Because otherwise, if you don't, I don't know what you do here. If you look at it on paper and you're going to stick with this tag title match, so what do you do then? Have, let's just say, you know, Goldust and Cody and the Usos against who? The Real Americans and, you know, the Shield? You know, is that what you do? I mean, I don't know exactly what you do here. And again, it's because they haven't been building towards anything, because they haven't really, you know, established guys or anything like that. I don't know what you do. I mean, I don't know if we're, because Alberto Del Rio is being so pro-Mexican right now and waving the flag that, you know, and they're obviously, I think they would love to do Antonio Cesaro and John Cena. I'm sure John Cena would love that. I'm sure Antonio Cesaro would love that as well, too. But, you know, does Del Rio hook up with them? Is there some swerve out of that so we can get to a third match? Because Del Rio put Cena through a table on SmackDown, and it was not said that, okay, this is going to set up to a tables match later on down the road, but we've certainly heard that. So, again, it's, you know, if you, it's not, it doesn't seem like a show that you have to go out there and see. And I, again, with how characters have been portrayed and how, you know, angles have been developed in the last couple of weeks, what can they possibly add to make you want to order this? That, okay, well, this is going to put it over the top for me. And to me, it's going to be very difficult to do that on Monday, but I guess we shall see. It's just on paper, again, on paper, it's just another, it's another missable pay-per-view.
Well, here's the question to me. Which title match goes on last? They're trying to make these equal. My prediction is that John Cena Alberto Del Rio goes on last, and that John Cena beats him, and then afterwards Alberto Del Rio beats him up and puts him through a table. Although, actually, you know what? They probably will do that on Raw, because they don't like leaving the pay-per-views with a sad ending. So I think John Cena just beats Alberto Del Rio. Del Rio puts him through another table on Raw, and it sets up a table match for TLC. You alive over there?
Yeah, sorry about that. I should have hit mute. Yeah, sorry, a little cough there.
just making sure you were still alive. And then Randy Orton and The Big Show for the WWE title. You really think that Randy Orton is beating The Big Show clean? I mean, I see screw job finish. I see Survivor Series
screw job. I can do that cough again to scoff at it.
But Randy Orton, Big Show, I just think that that's going to be your typical Survivor Series screw job finish. And is that really what we need in the WWE title match? Yet another screw job finish.
That's the thing.
I'm done
with
it.
That's the thing. Well, yeah, and that's, so again, you know, you haven't been giving people, I think, what they wanted anyway, which was, again, Daniel Bryan to have a little bit of ascension. You didn't have to keep him on it long, but you have played this game now with the title over and over again, and I guess you could say that this is just a part of the gimmick with Randy Orton and Helmsley McMahon. Or whatever, but it sucks. It's not very fun. It doesn't make me want to separate. You know, again, it's a TV thing to do. You know, why would anybody order this when they can just sit back and see what happens with Raw on Monday? It's like, you know, it's like what TNA would do. And again, to say it's even TNA, WWE's been doing this for a long, long, long time now. This isn't must-see, I got to separate from my $60 type of programming. It's not, and it's probably going to happen like that, where they do want to send people happy, so Cena wins in the main event. That's great, but as far as, you know, Big Show, nobody thinks, again, that would be the justice for how dumb he was treated this past Monday night and how dumb he looked this past Monday, but I don't think it's going to happen.
All right, everybody, we're going to head to our break. And when we come back, I've got a very, very important question. Actually, a couple of them. Two very important questions for Mike Sempervivi that you're not going to want to miss. So stand by that dial. You're listening to Wrestling Observer Live on the Sports Byline Broadcasting Network. We are back here for the final segment of the show. Brian Alvarez here, WrestlingObserver.com. We're joined by Mike Sempervivi, also of WrestlingObserver.com. And Mike, I got a few important questions for you here. Number one, I have heard that you did not watch the debut episode of Total Divas. Is that correct?
I'm very, very ashamed. Unfortunately, I have not. It's on my DVR.
All right. Question number two. Are you going to watch both episodes of Total Divas tonight and file a report on the show next week?
I absolutely am. In fact, it's a double D kind of evening. It's double Divas taking place in my home this evening after that show with Dave last night. I have slept most of the day today. I've got a cold, which you have heard because I've coughed into the microphone. But I am going to get some NyQuil. I'm going to take the NyQuil. I'm going to sit down, and I don't think it'll put me to sleep. No, it'll just put me in the mood to discover everything that is Cameron and the rest of the gang on Total Divas. Apparently, there's drinks being thrown at cars.
Hold on. I got one more question before we go.
Yes.
Did you rush to get a plane ticket to the UK when you heard that AJ Lee collapsed and fainted during a house show?
You know, I did not. I did not. Now, if you would have told me that it was Layla, I may have.
I see. Yes, AJ Lee collapsed. She fainted during a house show. She's telling everybody
she's...
I did
get a tattoo of the date, though, on my neck to commemorate when she fell out in the ring.
She's told everybody that she's fine, and presumably she's fine. It was a very grueling, exhausting tour, and a lot of people did not feel well, and apparently it affected her the worst. But
hey, long plane rides suck. You know that right now.
Oh, trust me, I know that. I got off the plane, and I thought I was going to die. I was miserable for a full 12 hours afterwards, but I feel great now, and we're going to wrap it up on that note, everybody. Want to thank you all for listening. We got a lot of shows up on the front page. I believe the Brian and Vinny show returns tonight. Not positive. But I'm going to do everything I can to make that work. So check out the front page for more if you're a subscriber. If you're not, head over there and check out the latest free shows and consider signing up. I promise you, you will not regret it. Shows every single day. And shows tonight and tomorrow. I want to thank Mike, as always, everybody at Sports Byline USA. I am off to the beach. You're listening to Wrestling Observer Live on the Sports Byline Broadcasting Network.